CBS, Isle of the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Bill Raggio of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, a senior fellow keeping the Long War Journal, keeping an eye on the terrorism of the last 20 years plus, led by Al-Qaeda, also with ISIS and other organizations that are linked to both in several continents. We begin, however, with language from the Department of Defense about the scale of the threat now represented by Al-Qaeda, ISIS, etc. Bill, a very good day to you. There is a new Defense Department strategy document, many pages, focusing on Moscow and Beijing and the nuclear weapons threat and missile defense and all appropriate language. But in it, according to Time magazine, is a particular subset of concern that strikes me as that was then, this is now. The way Time magazine summarizes, other challenges discussed in the document emanate from Iran and North Korea and, quote, violent extremist organizations, end quote, which is military jargon for terrorist groups. The Biden's team focus on Moscow and Beijing, writes Time, is consistent with the U.S. national security complex's desire to pivot from the morass of violence and counterterrorism operations in the Middle East and engage in great power competition. Desire, Bill. Now, implicit in the word desire is a context for this. To your knowledge, does the Department of Defense regard Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and other bad actors of similar stripe no longer a threat to the national security of the U.S. and our allies? Have they been demoted? Good evening to you, Bill.
Good evening, John. Yes, I think you nailed it there with the focusing on the word desire. The Department of Defense, the Biden administration, what we're seeing with this document, with this is the pivot from the war on terror to the great power competition. This has been desired in Washington for more than a decade now. And this document is the culmination of that. You know, we could desire to pivot from the morass of violence and counterterrorism operations, but it doesn't mean that that morass of violence is going to go away. This is the one thing, the narrative of the endless wars narrative put out by both the left, you know, the Democratic Party, and even the Trump administration. You know, it was a desire to end these so-called endless wars, but those wars don't end because you leave them. These terrorist groups are still fighting. Let me be clear. China and Russia, those have risen as major threats and as the major threats to the United States. But you cannot demote the threat of terrorism because you desire to get away from it. It just doesn't work like that. The terrorism threat has been clearly demoted to secondary or tertiary threat. I think that is a major mistake. When the West took, when the U.S. took the eye off the ball of terrorism in the 1990s, it resulted in 9/11. It gives the terrorist groups the time and space to operate, plot, and execute attacks. I don't want Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State have a far greater footprint across the world today than they did on September 10th, 2001. I don't want to give them the time and space to innovate.
So what we have here is an in-between language. So let's go to what we do know about Al-Qaeda and its bad actor kindred. We have a headline from London. Oldest Guantanamo prisoner released after 17 years, Saifullah Paracha, 75, returns to Pakistan after being held but never charged over suspected Al-Qaeda ties. Who is he, Bill, and his release? What does that say about the ongoing Al-Qaeda presence in Pakistan, in the region, in the subcontinental region?
Paracha was, if you read the documents, the accusations against them by the Department of Defense and the U.S. intelligence community, was a facilitator and financier to Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. He helped finance the 9/11 attacks on the United States. Look, the Guantanamo and the trials or lack thereof of the Guantanamo Bay detainees was one of the biggest failures in this war. It allowed people like Paracha to be described as a doddering old man. Hey, look, he was 55 when he was first detained. Instead of being tried or being prosecuted for his role in 9/11, There is now, I believe, 35 terrorists held at Guantanamo. 9 of them are going to be put on trial, and the other 20 or 21 will probably be released. Again, this is the part of the desire to end the endless war. Guantanamo is a nasty relic of the former war on terror, and we desire to be beyond it. So let's just ship guys like Paracha, who is, again, responsible for killing thousands of Americans. He played a role in that. And let's send them back to Pakistan, our friends, the Pakistanis who supported the Taliban's takeover of Afghanistan, which shelters Al-Qaeda. It's just a nasty circle of failure that we're witnessing. Paracha is just one example of it.
And Bill, what does this mean about Guantanamo, about the people being held there? I lost track years ago as to whether there was or was not a trial that was acknowledged or a place to hold the trial. Are they now just cast into limbo? They're on Monte Cristo forever, and there will be no escape.
I may be wrong with the numbers, but I believe it's somewhere around 35 detainees being held. 9 of them will be put on trial. Those include Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. But you know, it's amazing that 20 plus years after 9/11, we still couldn't figure out how to prosecute these guys. The other 20 are going to be released in one way or another. And they're released by sending them back to their home country. And the home country's claim, you know, the promise is, oh, we'll hold them. We'll take care of them. But what happens is they eventually get loose into the wild. Paracha probably won't spend a day in Pakistani prison, or he'll probably be freed immediately and he'll be treated as a hero for being held at Guantanamo. We created martyrs by having a poor process. The military tribunals were an absolute disaster. The political will wasn't there to do it. I think it was shoddy legal work. I'm not a legal expert, but the fact that you couldn't take individuals who we knew what they were doing and put them on trial for 9/11 just speaks volumes about the incompetence of this really occurred under the Bush administration. The Obama administration really just was happy to start freeing them.
So what we have here is a link to the original attack of 9/11. And that link is being turned back to the region where there's reason to believe he'll be celebrated. I understand that. Recently, you did a report on someone who was part of the 5 Taliban members who were released by the Obama administration. I believe now he has a significant post in Afghanistan. So being held or targeted by the U.S. is a status symbol. However, that was then. This is now. We come to a report about Al-Qaeda in your Long War Journal by your colleague Caleb Weiss. Al-Qaeda ideologue calls for jihad in Sudan, provides guidelines. This is an analysis. A Jihada publishing house believed linked to Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, releasing a book compiled of various letters written by the ideologue Abu Hafaya al-Sudani. So Al-Qaeda is now an active disruptor of governments throughout Africa and the Middle East and into Asia. Is all that correct? And is that a growing focus? I mean, this publishing house is quoting this man as if he was a representative of a liberating moment. Is that the 20 years later? Is that how Al-Qaeda is viewed?
Yeah, that's how Al-Qaeda views itself. And that's how Al-Qaeda projects itself as it. Al-Qaeda is the vanguard. It's the base of the jihad. Abu Hudhaifa al-Sudani, this is an individual we knew very little about. We just knew he had some ties to bin Laden and he was a Sudanese jihadist. And then he releases this 83-page book, which is basically a strategy document. He talks about how you have to, you know, focus on the preaching or the dawah. And then he talks about how to conduct military operations. And he's writing this. Al-Qaeda has, you know, it's not, Al-Qaeda is a learning institution. And that's what we see in this. 20 plus years after 9/11, Al-Qaeda is still talking about how do we take over these governments, these what they consider apostate governments, and reestablish the caliphate. Al-Sudani here is talking about how to do it in the Sudan. He notes that it's been a very difficult process, that previous iterations has failed. He's taking in lessons from other theaters and trying to apply them and basically give a roadmap for Sudanese jihadists to unite and take over a country. It's probably a tall task, but this individual, his ties to Al-Qaeda, his ties to attacked in Saudi Arabia in the early 2000s at the beginning of this war. It's individuals like this. If people talk about Al-Qaeda as if it's this dead institution because we killed the top X leaders of the group who were involved in 9/11. Well, here's a guy who flies under the radar for 20 years, and now he's in the center. You know, people may dismiss him as being a nobody, but he's not. He's a very influential individual who is pushing Al-Qaeda's plan.
Defense Department is aware of all of this, and I understand they can be overwhelmed with the threat analysis. But is it your measure that they're still tracking all these individuals as you do at Long War Journal?
Yeah, there is still work being done, particularly at U.S. Central Command is where the big effort. I know individuals there who are concerned about this being pushed to the side, but they're doing their best to keep this, to keep documenting, to keep explaining the threat. And there have been several targets of Al-Qaeda and Islamic State operatives in both Somalia and in Syria over the last month. So they are still going after them. But once the major message is the threat is reduced, CENTCOM starts looking elsewhere.
Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.